Three, two, one.
Welcome everyone to this week's episode of the No Normal Show, brought to you by Revive. This is where we leave all the things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust and celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the future, all related to how brands can lead the way in health. I'm your co-host, Desiree Duncan, Vice President of Health Equity and Inclusion at Revive, and I'm joined by co-host Stephanie Weirwill, SVP of Integrated Marketing. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Des. Good to see you again.
Good to see you. And I'm also joined by co-host Chris Wickline, SVP of Strategy at Revive. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Des. Hi, Stephanie.
So excited to be back with you. On this week's episode, we will be discussing some societal trends, what we're seeing this year and how they affect health decisions. We had a little bit of a conversation around like, societal trends versus cultural trends. And to me, when I think about societal trends, it's about all the things that are happening to essentially all of us that we're experiencing. So some of those topics are going to be around climate change, inflation, what we're seeing around like people being singled or married or choices that they're making for their own families, their own like lifestyle versus cultural trends, which is more what are the things that we're seeing rising. When I think of cultural trends, I immediately think of fashion because that's what we see right readily available. And I'm just the fact that the 90s fashion is back is really kind of killing me. But it's all about retro. Like cultural trends here in recent years have been about throwbacks and retro and, you know, rebringing things back that were once not were once like past.
Wait, but. Des, it's killing you in terms of you don't like the 90s fashion or you do?
It's making me feel a way in the sense that I remember people older than me back in the day, like, oh, well, we did that in the 70s. You're wearing your wide leg jeans. Like we had bell bottoms in the 70s. You're not doing anything new. And I was like, but we are. And now I'm going and at the mall and in Forever 21 or whatever. I'm just feeling very Forever 46. But it is all of the JNCOs and like Airwalks, and can you tell that I was a skater kid? All of those things are back and it's really messing with my head.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a good offshoot we can have one time because I'm really into the 90s world. I just feel like I'm living my best, you know, the prime of my life is back and I get to be my real true self now.
I mean, honestly, aren't we all just... I don't know. It's like it used to be nostalgic, but now it's like reality again. I don't know. I just feel weird about it.
Well, just be grateful it's not the 80s. Big hair. So, you know, look for the good.
Look for the good. It's not the 80s. Sorry, 80s babies. All right, let's jump in with some headlines. What's going on in health news?
We do have an interesting headline. We have been discussing for a while now, months, maybe years, the possibilities of Apple's big entrance into healthcare. And now we have a really interesting and pretty big rumor flying around about the tech giant. And if this is true, it would dramatically change things. So, the rumor is that Apple will launch health insurance in 2024. Now, they could build on their robust health data that Apple already captures from their watch and their phone, and the rumor is that they might potentially partner with a major insurer. So think the scale and business of an existing payer, plus the consumer-first data and hopefully user-friendly practices, if you ask me, that Apple would bring to the table. So if Apple launches health insurance, imagine for a second, I get my steps in, I keep my heart rate down, I get enough sleep, I don't drive too fast, don't get in any crashes, and can I reduce my health insurance premiums? There could be some really interesting collaborations that happen here, not to mention, of course, the potential of simplifying some of the health insurance practices. So that all remains to be seen. It's a rumor right now, a really interesting rumor, but we're definitely watching.
All right, we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back after these messages.
If you're a longtime listener of the No Normal Show, then you know that we are big fans of the Health Conference. Health, HLTH, is a space where health brands of all kinds come together to imagine the future of the industry through collaboration between health tech, health systems, retailers, pharma, plans, payers, and beyond. And this year, Revive is a sponsor of Health and will be in Las Vegas for the conference from November 13 through November 16. So please stop by at booth 723 of the show floor on level 2 of the Venetian Expo and Convention Center and say hello. We'll be giving away a limited number of Joe Public 2030 books, so be one of the first to come on over. We will see you at Health.
All right, let's jump into these societal trends that we were talking about and how they are affecting our everyday lives and also our health decisions. Stephanie, the climate change, it's a thing. Please update us on what's going on.
Yes, I'm going to take a very narrow scope in this because we're not here to solve the climate change situation as much as I wish we were, but we're going to take a focus on it as a public health crisis, and that's how we focused on it as we've talked about it in the past. So perhaps this is one of the biggest public health crises in our collective present and future. But what's happening at the moment, there's a lot more data coming in from physicians and providers in terms of how they're seeing climate change affect health. So recently in from Columbia University, first of all, to gather around our collective terminology, climate exacerbated illness is the most regularly used term in hospitals and the news for climate related illnesses. So that includes things like heat strokes, heat exhaustion, dehydration. And as an example, this past summer, 2022, New York City had a record increase of patients in the emergency department directly related to heat. So that's one example of climate related and climate exacerbated illnesses. We also have seen in general the volume of patients with issues that can be directly linked to heat has been greater than in past summers nationwide. And this also relates to illnesses and exacerbations like respiratory diseases, COPD, asthma, congestive heart failure, even mental health that just comes with all of this stress and anxiety. And the maybe most least exciting one, scariest to me, is an increase around what we call vector-borne illnesses. So vectors are mosquitoes, fleas, ticks. Think, dengue fever and Zika virus. So that is also on the rise. In fact, Miami reported a third case of dengue fever recently. So, you know, fun times. As a former boss of mine used to say, fast times at Rydell High. That's where we are with this. So what do you all think before I get into a little bit more of the fun?
Yeah, you know, and I mean, I don't know if this is fitting your definition of narrow and where you want to go, but look at Hurricane Ian, right? And the physical health and mental health impacts, you know, to folks down there and that are going to continue to come. I mean, you know, there's just a lot.
Right. And with it being different, you know, you don't really know how to prepare for it. So for example, last year we saw a lot of firsts. I happened to be in Austin, Texas during the big winter storm where it was like freak snowfall in February in a pretty deserty area. And just thinking about the infrastructure and folks not necessarily being prepared because they're not used to snow. And then I happen to also be in Seattle during the big heat wave. A lot of those homes do not have air conditioning. So that goes back to the heat strokes and some of those issues that you had mentioned before. But it was really fascinating to see just how quickly, along of course with a Hurricane Ian, how quickly some of these things can take down our systems, in the sense that in Texas, the grid went down, water was not available, clean water was not available. So these are things that we really have to, you know, almost not necessarily be prepared for, but at least have some sort of strategy for. I don't know.
Yes. And it's so much. It's heat, it's hurricanes, it's wildfires, it's tornadoes. I mean, it's the whole gamut. So there were some interesting stats on the California wildfires, which happened in 2020, but there's some data that's been coming out recently around how we're in a sort of cyclical feedback loop with these weather-related issues. So there was a lot of work done, of course, in the state of California to reduce greenhouse gases dating back to 2003. And all of that work was wiped out because the wildfires actually spiked greenhouse emissions even more. So not only do we have to think about, you know, health-related issues from the wild, from things like wildfires and hurricanes and beyond, but also what are the implications that maybe we're not able to predict that just put us in even a worse spot.
It's crazy. Have any of you been near a wildfire?
I've not been like in a big wildfire, but when I was driving in, I was coming back from Sedona and heading back towards Phoenix, and there was just like a pop-up fire along the side of the interstate. Like, no big deal. Like, this happens all the time. So not quite a wildfire, but it was really interesting to see how it probably was just one person throwing a cigarette out the window and, you know, the effects of that that can happen, especially when you're seeing it in the California and some of the national parks where just homes and whole communities were devastated from this one decision, because you're not paying attention to like what effect your one action has on the greater whole.
Yeah. You know, my sister lives in Lake Tahoe. So, you know, last year, during some of the major fires that were around the South Lake area, I mean, the air quality was poor for weeks, right? And that happened to be one kind of not related to carelessness. At least I don't think they think that one was. But yeah, the impact is on public health is huge. And, you know, take that in terms of somebody who has difficulty breathing due to asthma and other impacts and, you know, double whammy.
And the fact that a lot of these fires, they're moving more and more east. Experienced a bit of that in Colorado. I'd went with a friend that lived there probably in the 80s, 70s. And, you know, back then, sky so blue, you can see the Rocky Mountains out of any window you look at. But, you know, when you're there today, the sky was vivid murky. It was giving me LA vibes, flying into LAX where you can't see anything. Like, oh yeah, smog is huge here. That was the sky in Denver. Like, you could not see the Rocky Mountains because of the fires that are happening in Colorado as well.
The way that my anxiety plays out is, okay, what spot on earth has the least likelihood of earthquakes, tornadoes, fires, hurricanes, floods, volcanoes? Like, the list is really long and I don't know where that is.
Allegedly, they say Tennessee is kind of that healthy, like more in the hills of Tennessee. We do have our tornadoes. But if you're in like the foothills, like of middle Tennessee, that's like the safest zone and like the freshest water.
Okay. Well, let's not, you know, promote that too highly. Right. So here's just to wrap this one up. There's a really interesting kind of anecdote noted. It was at South By earlier this year. Amy Webb, who leads the Future of Today Tech Institute, always does her tech trends, and I look forward to it. It's like my little Christmas morning when she presents that. But earlier this year, she talked about climate change, and she said, you know, we still don't have a good way to communicate the urgency of this. And the reason is because it's really hard to imagine what does that world look like. And so she had this kind of mocked up weather app, and it was, you know, kind of funny, but also really, really not. And it said at the top, like 50% chance of firenados. Her point being, we're going to have to come up with new language. Like, it's not just fires and heat and, you know, extreme temperatures. It's all these things at once. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're going to have to recalculate our language and everything around. So I'll just leave us with that.
Yay, new words.
Yay.
I don't know if have any of you watched 5 Days at Memorial, the series on Hulu that's about those 5 days after Katrina at Memorial Hospital. Well, this kind of ties back into, you know, the effects of climate, and essentially hospitals at a lot of times becomes that harbor of safety or that place that you go for help. And, you know, if you're – so in this case after Katrina, this hospital lost power, but it still had these patients that were there. But essentially the issue is that this hospital in particular did not have a flood strategy or any way to combat whatever is happening with nature, what their system, what their setup, what their strategy is going to be for protecting and, you know, getting their patients out of harm's way. But so that's something to think about, especially for cities and communities that deal with a lot of weather and hurricanes and tornadoes, is like, how can you keep afloat and stay grounded to protect those that are in your care, as well as be in that place that maybe people are going to flock to. That was just something that was really interesting that I noticed, like, wow, because yeah, where do you go when you have nothing? You try to make your way towards a hospital because surely there's some answers there, but maybe not. All right, let's keep this train rolling on all the fun societal things. Inflation, not fun, but this is what we're hearing. Chris, what have you been seeing around inflation?
Is that a trend, really? I mean, you can't turn on the television news. You can't open up your news app without seeing that at the top of the hit parade, and everybody waiting for the latest indicator of are we or aren't we in a recession and what's happening, right? How consumers are feeling. I mean, local news really takes advantage of this. The everyday story about the impacts locally. So let's think about healthcare for a minute. So first of all, let's talk about kind of what's obviously what those of you who work in health systems are feeling day in and day out, right? The cost side impact of inflation and what's happening to you from things like increased labor costs, from increased supply costs, from pharmaceutical costs, just getting hammered, right? Employers haven't quite been feeling it yet. And again, this is crazy. Just think about the delay of what happens. You have costs rising now. Employers won't feel them until they're passed along in contracts with payers, right? So it's a weird dynamic. There's still a couple of years or more for consumers to actually start feeling the impact, but they're going to start. It's projected that, employers have seen 6 to 7% increases a year over the last 3 years. It's projected it's going to stay at the 4 to 5% level or more. And employers are already talking about how they're going to mitigate that through things like cost containment methods or increased cost sharing through high deductible health plans. McKinsey recently did a study or recently published a paper around this with some really interesting stuff. So I think the consensus, though, is that we're not going to be able to raise rates to cover healthcare costs to get our way out of this. It's untenable, right? So employers can't continue to raise rates on employees and continue to compete for labor that they need. So it's an interesting dynamic. I'll stop there before we go into the consumer side of things.
Yeah, I think about how, I guess, how industries see some of the trends before they get to other industries. So we've been hearing about like supply chain issues and the cost of materials for building, especially since during the pandemic, a lot of people were doing a lot of home renovations and just not really having the access to it and just how expensive. So I don't know. I guess I think about how, like, it's almost like what industry do we look to even pay attention to trends? Because like, is there that one industry that gets affected first, then it kind of trickles down to everyone else. But that's just the thing that I think about inflation as far as thinking about like what's next and what industries have been affected and how this might help us prepare for like in our own industries.
Well, and actually, I mean, the thesis is that healthcare spending as a percent of household income actually has been low, but that's kind of just given a situation of the recent dynamics. They haven't yet felt the increase of costs, and wages had, from 2017 on had been increasing. But again, that trend is going to stop because they haven't been feeling the impact. But when you do talk about consumers, I mean, they're being hit with everyday expenses, increased costs of food, increased costs of gasoline. The consumer you know, price index has gone up significantly. Inflation is at a 40-year high. The core inflation rate is at its highest point since 1982. So the more pressured they're getting on other things, the more they look. And I know, I mean, I do too. I actually cut my, now I just bought a condo, but I actually cut my, my Sirius XM subscription. Mm. I was paying $20 a month. They offered me like $4 a month. I texted my boyfriend. I'm like, should I keep it? And he's like, no, get rid of it. You don't need it. You know, and I've been ruthless about things myself, right? Yeah. And I'm certainly not a consumer on the margin. So, you know, Gallup did a study back in August. 4 in 10 Americans are cutting spending around healthcare costs. So 1 in 4 are skipping care or medicine due to rising costs. 2/5 are concerned about affording needed care in the next 6 months. And here's the scariest one to me. Women under 50 are disproportionately foregoing care and prescriptions. These folks are the you know, the healthcare czars of their families, right? Mm-hmm. They may be cutting back to, you know, to accommodate other family expenses, but you know, if you consider the fact that belts are getting tightened on top of the fact that we're not yet feeling the full impact, or consumers aren't necessarily feeling the full impact of increased costs of care, it's kind of not a great bellwether, right?
Yeah. And it's looming, it's coming. And these are things that we'll need to pay attention to. But Stephanie, did you have some thoughts?
Well, I was just going to ask you, Chris, what is your theory for this women under 50 disproportionately foregoing care? What is your, I mean, is it simply because, okay, prices are higher in other areas of life, we need to prioritize those other areas of life, maybe it's homeownership or whatever, or are there other factors in your opinion?
You know, I mean, if you're just asking my opinion, what I'd be saying is that consumers are just looking to cut in general to cover the costs of things that are felt like more daily necessities. Can I put that mammogram off for 6 months because, well, that's not a great example, sorry, because that's actually, you know, a covered benefit. But can I put some other maybe unnecessary care
MRI
thing off?
MRIs, yeah, are expensive, out, right, of pocket.
Right, you know, to cover the cost of other things. Again, you can't hear the news on, you can't turn the news on or read the news without hearing about consumers who are trying to find way to maintain their lifestyles. And if you have something that's a potentially, you know, not an immediate need, not an imminent need, is it easier to put that off? That's my opinion.
One other thing, and this is just drawing on past focus groups that we've done for specifically service lines. One of the findings that we've had, and it's probably not shocking, but especially with women who are parents with families or have lots of responsibilities, even, you know, whether it's a single mom or whatever, that postponing, it's not just the money, it's the time. And in a time like this, when maybe folks may be getting a side hustle or just feeling crunched from all the anxieties that of the world that we live in, putting your life on hold to take care of healthcare is a huge undertaking. And that's one of the main reasons why many people will delay things like surgeries or, you know, especially elective surgeries. So I don't know. I guess if we're talking theories, that could be one, as well as everyone seems pretty crunched right now, not just financially, but from a mind space standpoint.
Mm-hmm. I mean, all the more reason to be reminding consumers about, you know, about care needs, about routine care needs, you know?
Yeah. And speaking of some of those like lifestyle changes and all that good stuff, our next topic is around the idea that, I don't know, roughly, you know, half of Americans aren't married. We're looking at some data from Pew, and essentially 69% of Americans are partnered, or, you know, the definition of is either married or living with a significant other, whether that you are married or not. And that about 30 something percent of folks are single and are choosing that lifestyle. And if we think about, Chris, what you had mentioned around how a lot of times, at least within hetero families, that women are the healthcare decision makers. They lead all the things. They make sure that everyone gets their appointments, their medications, for not only themselves and their kids, but also for spouses. You know, what does that look like? And I was looking at the numbers around like men's health. Follow me, camera. I know I've been doing a lot of more research around like men's health more so than women's health. That's because we talk a lot about how women make those decisions, and maybe a lot of our marketing is geared towards those folks. But as we see, especially men of color dying at younger ages, you know, it makes me think about how we can do a better job in speaking and reaching these folks. Like Coolio, rapper, speaking of the 90s, you know, passed away a couple of weeks ago. Before then, him, there was a John Singleton, there's Biz Markie, there's all of these men who are fallen victim to health at such a young age. And so it's thinking about some of those opportunities to talk more with these men, get them on a care. And if they aren't, you know, partnered in a relationship, you know, what does that look like as far as them making health decisions? Obviously, people are making decisions for themselves or deciding not to. But just thinking how much of your relationship status, I guess, even plays a role in some of the healthcare decisions that you make. Just curious if in your thoughts or just any anecdotal experiences around health and maybe the men in your life or the way that you choose to live your lives.
Well, I was having an emotional light bulb as you were discussing that topic, does, because how many times have we heard health organizations say that they, you know, we are your partner in health? Well, does that not make partner mean a lot more when there are folks of all kinds who don't have people looking after their health, may not have family members? I don't know. It just made it more meaningful to me as you talked about it that way.
Ooh, that's an interesting point, especially around some of the anecdotal stuff I'd heard from folks is around like maybe young men in their life, brothers or, you know, cousins, uncles or whatever, they usually ask their mom or their aunt around, oh, should I go see a doctor about this? And, you know, what does it really mean to be a partner? Chris?
Well, and I mean, I just think it goes back to the whole idea of helping people stay healthy, right? Versus just treating them, you know, just treating them when we're sick. And I mean, you know, we believe that's our mission. And so the question is kind of, you know, what are we doing around that? I mean, you know, great example, you know, my partner took him until he was 58 years old to get his first colonoscopy. And that was also after seeing a friend get colon cancer. And it was a little bit of prodding and, I hate to say guilt, but maybe that's it. You know, I mean, but if you don't have anybody doing that, reminding, I don't mean making you feel guilty, yeah. you know, where does it come from?
Well, just to bring it down to the actionable level for health organizations, this is where CRM can really do some heavy lifting, right? Like a strong CRM program, and we all know the barriers of that, but a strong CRM program can be that partner, can be the educator, but also the reminder and the personalized, here's what you need because of your age, because of your lifestyle, because of, you know, your last appointment. I take a big sigh because I think everyone in the industry sees the value of that, but has struggled implementing.
Yeah, if there's a way to find it along those life moments that we can maybe reach out to folks to have those conversations, use that CRM rather than just say, hey, this person came in for this procedure, I will check up on them about this one specific thing. You know, you can think about what are all of the other things that pop up when you have this one particular chronic illness. So like, for example, diabetes, you know, there is risks of hypertension and other health things that you can put some messaging out around that. But yeah, I know that we listed divorce as a major, huge health event in your life because, you know, speaking of all that stress and the anxiety and the change, you know, that can cause more health issues that you're ignoring because you're trying to figure it out. But those are those opportunities to really reach someone when they're in need, they're not necessarily thinking about it, to have that true, authentic connection with them.
Yeah, I would pay a subscription fee for a personalized, hey, concierge medicine. But I'm talking more about personalized, lifestyle-based health prevention, ongoing, specific to me and my clinical data. You know, what do I need to do today? Tell me what to do today. What do I need to do tomorrow and the next day? Mm-hmm. I haven't seen that. I would like it.
Well, and I don't mean to say this to be critical, but I honestly do get more reminders about things I've missed from my insurance company than I do from my healthcare provider. And I hate to say that because I feel like I'm being blasphemous, but it is reality. And I have asthma, and I've had far more outreach around, and it's not even serious asthma. It's mild to moderate asthma. And I've had more outreach around care management for my asthma. You know, so yeah, you know, if I go to my health insurer right now, which I did today because I was looking at it for actually research, if you will, to see what payers are doing. And geez, you should see they're reminding me of things that I need to do, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not so sure I get as many of those reminders from my provider. In fact, I know I don't. And there's something missing there because that's where my relationship is, right?
It is. That's the relationship. That's where providers stand above all in the sense that they are those trusted partners, that relationship, that doctor, that one-on-one relationship, you know, take ownership of that. All right, let's wrap this up. Stephanie, Chris, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. Awesome. Thank you. And maybe over our next few episodes, we'll have some more rainbows and sunshine than we did in this one.
Yes, we will. We'll definitely pick it up. We got to muddle through all the things in order to find that sunshine on the other side. Or maybe that's just Shawshank Redemption. So for all of you listening, thank you so much for joining in. If there's something you want us to cover, shoot us an email at nonormal@reviveagency.com. Or if you have some other societal trends, cultural trends you'd like for us to discuss, you know, shoot that email right over to us. And make sure you share this episode with friends and colleagues and give us a review and rating on iTunes, preferably 5 stars. But all of that would be much appreciated. And until next time, don't ever be satisfied with the normal. Push that no normal, y'all, and we'll see you in a few weeks.